This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the official start of the weekend. As far as we're concerned, it is a football Friday, and we will take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern time, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio. So we are efforting to connect with Brady Quinn, a little behind the scenes here when it comes to the pride and joy of Dublin, Ohio, and South Bend, Indiana. Brady Quinn's in Chicago because Big Noon Kickoff is there for Fox. They'll be on the call for the Notre Dame Wisconsin game at Soldier Field.
Got to be cool calling your team's game.
Yeah, you know? That's awesome.
Well, being there for the pregame.
That is awesome. And I actually think that's probably better than having to call the game, because now you can actually be a homer and nobody's going to bust your balls for it on the air. Like, if you were going to call a Penn State game, you know somebody would bust your balls for it on the air.
Sure.
It would be
very difficult not to be biased.
Yes.
But I would do my job. I would call the game. And the good thing about it is when you're calling a game, you're really talking about what you see. It, you know, there's only guys like Michael Irving, and a few times you'll hear Troy Aikman get caught up into being a former Dallas Cowboy, and you'll hear that come out in some of their commentary. But I mean, for the most part, the subjective approach to how you would call a game is really based off of, you know, what plays are being ran, what strategy you see playing out, what guys you see playing and how they're playing. They're playing hard. They're not playing hard. They came to play. They didn't come to play. So I think it would be really fun to call a Penn State game, to be honest. Even if they were to end up, like, being behind.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be more difficult, you know, because on the inside I'd be dying a slow death. But otherwise, I think it would be fun.
And listen, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, speaking of a guy.
What the hell are we talking about?
Speaking
right now
of a guy who's going to be surrounded by his alma mater this weekend, I present to you, he is the pride and joy of Dublin, Ohio. This man walked onto the campus of Notre Dame, and he set all sorts of records. Yeah. He's a Heisman Trophy finalist. You see him on Fox Sports 1.
Yeah.
You see him on Fox. You see him on Fox Sports Radio when LeVar gets TV hits. I present to you none other than the great Brady
Quinn. Yes.
LeVar, how impressive is that?
I mean,
how impressive is that?
I tried to get him off the hook at least three times,
he
and he just kept going.
He disrobed to try and throw me off this early in the morning.
That would definitely throw you off.
No.
You could do some jump rope.
No, that's not what I did.
You might be able to do some double Dutch jump rope.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Why did take it off of you and put it on to me? Oh, my gosh.
Some jump rope.
Oh, boy. You know what? Can I just say this? And LeVar, I know you can relate. I went back to Notre Dame yesterday, and what the best part about going back to South Bend and really Notre Dame, Indiana, because Notre Dame's big enough as the actual campus, its landmass, it can be considered its own town. So it's actually Notre Dame, Indiana, but it's awesome taking people back who've never been. And you take them back, and you go through campus, and obviously the campus is pristine. It's a small campus. There's only about 8,000 undergraduates, maybe another 2,000 plus graduate students, but you go back through the campus, you see the campus, that's pristine, but it's going into the stadium, going into the locker room, going down the tunnel, kind of hitting the signs, seeing all of that, going to the grotto. There's like this spiritual pulling too when you go by the church, the grotto, light a candle and all that. Like, it's a really cool experience to see other people do it because there's really nothing like it, and that's what makes it so unique. But I'm excited, man. I think it's going to be a great game. There's a lot of great storylines. Obviously, the reason why I'm here in Chicago is Notre Dame taking on Wisconsin tomorrow, noon Eastern, 11 a.m. here local. But it's going to be a great game. It's going to be a ton of fun to see what happens, because I got to be honest with you. Like, from the betting side of me, Wisconsin's a favorite. They're a 5.5, a 6-point favorite, and they're 1-1 right now. They lost to Penn State at home, and there's really nothing. You know, they had a bye last week. There's nothing that would indicate that they should be a favorite taking on a team that's ranked in 3-0 right now. And I think it's at least showed last week, better film, a better approach to everything. So it's going to be interesting to see how this game plays out.
Did Penn State ruin this week for Notre Dame? And let me explain why. Wisconsin already got their dose of reality, right? So it's not like you're going to catch Wisconsin sleeping, like, you know, it's not, let's not panic about this. Everything, you know, just everything's going to be fine. The fact that they opened up the year and got smacked.
Didn't get smacked.
Well, but they lost.
They did lose.
They lost at home.
They could have very easily won.
They could have very easily won that game.
Yeah. I would say, is this going to mean that you're going to get a much more focused Wisconsin team that understands we cannot afford any other losses, and maybe that's playing into the line and why they're such a favorite?
I think it's the opposite. I think we took their best shot. I mean, to go into Madison in an opening week, coming out of a pandemic year, and you have all your fans back, the emotional high that they were probably running on, hearing their own fans and everything. I think we did Notre Dame a favor, to be honest.
Gave them the blueprint?
Won't say gave them the blueprint because, again, I think we outlasted Wisconsin. I don't think that we necessarily beat or handled Wisconsin,
you
which
beat
sometimes
their ass, LeVar.
No, sometimes you got on defense. Yeah. We did pretty good, but they were really able to run the ball very well. That's my biggest. If I'm a Notre Dame fan, my biggest concern is how will you guys be able to handle them up front on the defense side of the ball?
Which is why I think they're such a heavy favorite, because you're not going to run the football versus Wisconsin. I mean, schematically, they put an extra guy down around the line of scrimmage in the box, as people like to say, to stop that. So that's not going to happen. So it really comes down to if they can throw their way. Wisconsin forced you to do this. They say it's almost like playing, like back when I was there, we played Navy every year, right? It goes back to old WW2 and Navy basically using Notre Dame's campus as an Army training base. A lot of people don't know that, but it helped keep the university afloat during that time. And so they then had a contract to play every single year afterwards. But one of the things you learn going against Navy every single year is they limit your possessions because they run the football all the time. Mm-hmm. And they have a certain style of play. And so you had to maximize every single possession that you had. Wisconsin's kind of like that. Like, they're going to run the football.
Yeah.
On defense, they're going to stop the run.
Yeah.
And they're going to force you to make these intermediate throws. So nothing short of 10 yards, but like everything that's maybe 12 to 18 yards, and then anything deep downfield, those are the throws they're going to force you to make. And they're going to try to make you do that over and over and over again in order to win. And that's what Penn State was able to do enough between their defensive performance and obviously a few big plays.
Yes.
And that's what they're going to force Notre Dame to try to do.
But,
so
you know,
it's a big challenge. It really is.
The good thing about this game, if you are a Notre Dame fan, is they do have a propensity to turn the ball over trying to throw the ball. Wisconsin is a running team, and you see, once if you're able to force them to have to win through the air, I don't think that Wisconsin is really equipped to be able to go through a game and win by throwing the ball. So you would have to assume that Notre Dame matches up well against this Wisconsin team, just based upon what you see both sides, their philosophies of how they go about their business within a game plan. You would have to assume that Notre Dame has a very good opportunity if they can two things, right? Which I mentioned up front, and you just mentioned, Brady, you have to be able to run the ball so that you can have the balance of being able to throw the ball, and you have to be able to stop Wisconsin's run and make them have to beat you through the air. Because if you do that, they may turn the ball over. They may give the ball to you.
By the way, for you degenerate flunky gamblers out there who are hearing Brady Quinn talk about the point spread and thinking, well, I don't like that. But I really would like to bet Notre Dame, but I'm not sure about that point spread. I don't know what I like here. Let me present to you a teaser. All right. And for people that aren't familiar with the teasers in the world of betting, this is how it works.
Yeah.
If you don't like the betting line, you can actually get it adjusted, but you need two things to happen. So in this case, say Notre Dame is a 6-point underdog against Wisconsin. If you still think Wisconsin's going to win the game, you're a little bit not quite sure about the point spread there, you can actually buy 6 points. All of a sudden, the point spread turns into Notre Dame plus 12, but you need the under to hit. And in order for that to happen, that also gets adjusted by 6 points. So if you think it's going to be a low-scoring game dominated by Wisconsin, but you think Notre Dame's going to keep it close, I would present to you the teaser, Brady Quinn. You can tell some of your flunky friends out there in South Bend that they can go ahead and get down on some action there.
Let's take this a little bit further. Yeah. The over-under is set, last time I checked, at 45 points.
Yes, I did see that as well.
This game will be at most like a 20-17. So in that scenario,
perfect.
Think about it. In that scenario, this teaser works because that total is at, 37? So you're still, even with that 6 points up to plus 12, you're still even, and pulling that back down to, 39 for your over-under, you're still falling underneath that.
What's the perfect football score? Like, if you had to pick the perfect football score.
I'm not getting into this.
Come on,
because,
I'm serious.
No, you are the contrarian to everyone out there who likes high-scoring games. I'm not doing this.
20-17 is perfect. I'm telling you. Because
I'd say late 20s. Early 30s.
You're a defensive guy, though.
Right. I want less points than that.
Hey, okay. 10-6.
You know what this is?
You don't want a 10-6 game?
This is Jonas in his single days getting denied, all right, at the bar in his single days, time and time and time again. Mm. He wants to watch a football game like that. He wants to watch an offense.
Keep losing.
Yes. Oh, they're going to score. Keep punting. Yes. Oh, they're going to score.
100%.
That is Jonas.
Yeah,
but you know what?
It's that will.
That's why he's a big 9-6 fan.
Yeah, not the other one though.
A lot of field goals.
It's very.
Not score many touchdowns.
Not getting on the field. How's that work? Man.
Not scoring at all with you, Jonas.
but you know what they say? Welcome to marriage, folks.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
I want to say that's all of us, but I don't want to speak for everyone.
Well, yeah.
I cannot. I cannot say that.
You can't relate.
I cannot relate to that.
I'm so happy for you, Brady.
It's good. Good to see we're telling lies on a Friday.
We're trying to put up 40, 50 on the board every week.
Oh, God bless. Shouts out to Miss Quinn.
old Brady Rivers over there.
Huh? Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Brady Quinn is in Chicago, getting ready to be there on the scene. A little big noon kickoff there at Soldier Field. Again, you've got Notre Dame and Wisconsin, so that's going to be a lot of fun on a Saturday. But never mind what's happening tomorrow.
What?
There's a big game that's happening next week. It is the Patriots and the Bucks. I don't know if you guys knew about that, but the Patriots and Bucks will be battling it out. Next week, and of course, this is the Tom Brady Bowl, where everybody is looking forward to this, and everybody is excited about Tom Brady going back to Foxborough and Tom Brady being there with the Patriots or with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on his former team, and the Tom Brady camp is talking a little bit, and you got Tom Brady's dad who's going on a podcast, saying that Tom Brady, of course, wanted a little bit of vindication, wanted a little bit of revenge. Then you've got Alex Guerrero, Tom Brady's trainer, who all of a sudden is a therapist. He is now not only a guru when it comes to health, but he's also a therapist, saying that Bill Belichick didn't know how to handle Tom when he got older, Bill was trying to treat him like a 20-year-old kid that he drafted. He didn't adjust his emotions. He didn't adjust to Tom Brady, who got older, and all these things. Tom Brady has tried to calm it down and say, listen, you know, these are all guys that care about me. And of course, they're very,
yeah.
You know, they want to defend me here. Like, who's Alex Guerrero? Now we know
get
why.
Get your lips off his cheeks, Alex.
Now we know why Belichick locked his ass out of the facility when he was in New England.
Get your lips off his cheeks, Alex.
What is it? Like, what are we doing here? Why is it seems like Belichick has moved on, the Patriots have moved on, and Tom Brady's camp can't let it go. Like, they cannot let it go that they had to go through what they went through towards the end.
But it's not about letting it go. It's
Jesus,
about,
man.
Listen, in boxing, right? I'm a big boxing fan. And in boxing.
So is Brady.
Okay, so Brady, right, because Tyrone was the boxer, right?
Damn right. Yeah,
actually, LeVar, I love boxing so much, I will live score it. I will give people my score on Twitter. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did not know that, but I will be paying attention
now. It's pretty pathetic if you ask me that he would do that.
It is pathetic. Yeah. It's weird. I do it, though. Yeah.
So in boxing culture, everything is surrounded by positive reinforcement, no matter what you do. Champ comes walking out of the car. Way to get out of the car, champ. Yeah. Okay, champ. Way to get out of the car, champ. The champ is here. Here we go, champ. Champ opens the front door. Somebody opens. Way to get him into the front door, y'all. The champ. Come on, champ. You ready for a good one, champ? All right, come on, champ. Champ gets his gloves on. Okay, champ. They putting them on right. They put that tape on the right way. Champ, look at your shoes. You looking good. You looking fly. How you feeling? Lean, mean, like a fight machine. Float like a butterfly. Sting like. Okay, champ, right? This is classic gassing your guy up. Tom Brady is one of them dudes, apparently. And you can tell by how he handles himself. Like, you know, watching the Super Bowl celebration when Tampa won and different things like that. And how they had to whisk him off. But you notice that it was just one person in particular that was handling him. That's someone that he trusted, and that's how that it all works. And, you know, they were probably walking him to the car that day like, okay, champ, okay, I know your knee is a little sore. I know you had that that eucalyptus avocado tequila in your system, but let's get you on home, champ. You feeling good? You feeling good? You great? Everything cool? He has a support system that will never let him go below a certain level of how he thinks about himself, how he views the world, because it's almost like it's too important for what it is that he brings to the table to be Tom Brady for him to ever be out of balance with what it is that he's created in his own world. And I think that this is a classic case of it. And you know what? God bless. Everybody should have an Alex Guerrero. Everybody should have somebody gassing them up and telling people, you didn't handle things the right way with my guy. If you would have did it this way, you would have been good.
God.
All right, so I had Alex Guerrero. When Willie McGinnis was with the Browns, he brought Alex in. And you know, he did some body work, soft tissue work, all that kind of stuff. And I'll be real. There's something about him, man. Like, I felt the best I probably ever felt after he worked with me that next day. I was like, I don't know what that dude is doing, but he whatever he's doing, like, he's getting players right. So I could see why, you know, people would buy 100% into whether it's him being, you know, basically behind the scenes of the TB12 method or, you know, being even out there speaking for Tom Brady, whatever you want to make it out to be. Like, he's got a proven track record. I mean, think about all the players he's worked with, Tom Brady in particular, but Gronk too. Mm. Like, so many players, they had the whole TB12, I believe, like, training facility and all that, right? Like, this is actually a tangent here, LeVar, but Jonas loves to tell the story of how he felt like Tom Brady and Alex Guerrero locked out Jimmy Garoppolo from going to the TB12. No, you said this. Okay. You said this on live air. Own up to it right now.
Okay.
Own it.
This is what I said.
Own it.
Seth Wickersham had this big, long piece on Tom Brady and how unhappy he was in New England. And one of the stories out there was that Seth Wickersham said that Jimmy Garoppolo went to go get into the TB12 facility and the door was locked.
Mm.
Like he
but
turned
people
it,
were inside?
Yeah, like, but nobody would answer the door for Jimmy Garoppolo. like they treated him like he was a kid who lit a bag of dog crap on fire and set it on the front porch and was trying to get somebody to put it out with their feet. It's like one of the details of it.
I didn't buy an example like that.
I'm just saying, the details of it didn't add up here. Listen, all I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to. I don't doubt that Alex Guerrero has had success as a trainer, but when I get Alex Guerrero going out and saying, "Well, you know, Bill hasn't evolved. His emotions haven't evolved." Dude, who the hell are you?
All right, let me give you like a serious.
It's like a mechanic walking up to you saying, "Hey, man, this is what I would do in your relationship. Kiss my ass. All right, go fix my tire."
I'm gonna give you some serious explanation here. All right, to athletes. They're trainers. Listen, man. They're trainers, generally, and they're barbers, right?
Yeah.
And the people that take care of, like, their vehicles or stuff like that, whatever it may be, things around the house, those are the people who know the most about the players. And that is a relationship. You build a bond with those people in particular. Some people do it with their trainers in-house, like at the facility, that are a part of the team. Some people do it with, you know, their own guy. Obviously, right here with Tom Brady, it's his own guy. But honestly speaking, you get to know each other so well because you spend so much time around one another that the relationship grows in a way where you start to understand one another from this perspective. So while I will say in all seriousness, not joking around, while I will say I feel like it's out of pocket for him to be quoted saying this, let me first start by saying that. I think that's totally out of pocket. At the end of the day, if Bill Belichick did not develop Tom Brady the way that he did, Alex Guerrero, your opinion of this wouldn't even matter.
100%.
So that's first and foremost. I played against Tom Brady in college. That ain't the same Tom Brady. All right? That ain't the same Tom Brady that I was giving the business to when we were playing in college. So in the end, don't be disrespectful. Like, even if you meant it in just the most general, I'm just giving you perspective way, that's not your place. There's too much of a history. There's too much success between them before you were ever even relevant to the scenario for you to even open your mouth in this situation. That's first and foremost. But then secondly, it does seem to me to give me the idea and the appearance of how much the New England Patriots situation really impacted, affected, and hurt, and maybe still has Tom Brady hurting even after a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. It gives me the feeling of Tom, this really, really is not going. It was a loss, like a funeral took, a death took place with Tom Brady, and that's what this comes across to me as.
Do you think he wanted to stay?
Yes.
No.
I don't. I think in an ideal world, if he had it on his druthers as to how things would be and how – and I think that's what Alex Guerrero is trying to say. Had they treated him differently, had they evolved together and evolved with him, you wouldn't even be in a situation where you have to deal with this. That's my take on it.
I think the interesting thing about the Patriots and this whole storyline, because this all really came about because we're talking about how Tom Brady feels, or Alex Guerrero speaking for Tom Brady,
right?
How he feels that Bill Belichick didn't evolve over time and view him as let's just put it simply, it's the greatest resume we've ever seen in the NFL. And as Tom Brady matured and developed and grew, he didn't view him any different than the quarterback that he won the first three Super Bowls with. And so that's what you're talking about, is essentially an organization or a coach who didn't want to adapt how he was going about managing that culture. And the interesting thing about that is we hear this all the time. The Seattle Seahawks, they win a Super Bowl, they go to another one, they end up losing because of, you know, the play calling, if you will, on the goal line. And we saw a fracture within that locker room that they were never able to overcome after that point. And then you started seeing players talk about Richard Sherman in particular, that like Pete was treating him like they were still that rookie, that, you know, new recruit at USC, in how he was going about handling it. And so I think it's interesting that you've got two of the older coaches, by the way. I do think Pete and Bill are the two oldest in the NFL.
Yeah.
Who have their way of creating a culture, wanting to coach their team, and not wanting to make any changes to how they're going about doing that. I think it's interesting. And I think if there's one player you're going to bend and change the rules for, or change how you handle,
it should have been him.
It should have been him. It should have been Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Alex Guerrero, by the way, went on to say, and this article that was in the Boston Herald, he went on to say when it came to Cam Newton, he said, "It's interesting. If you look at how Bill looks at some of those other players, it looks like to me he's been able to modify or change a little bit. Maybe he's forced to. If you're going to be a coach should be the one to modify or make changes." That, according to Alex Guerrero, who now is handing out coaching advice.
Think about that. Like, for example,
it's true, though.
If I had a new player, or, you know, if I was a new coach coming onto a team, I would rather adapt to the verbiage of that offense or defense rather than making them all adjust to me.
That's true, too.
Isn't that easier for them to deal with? It's like, all right, like, I'm a coach. I'm smart enough to be able to call it something else, even though it's the same thing I used to run, right? Like, you seldom times don't see that. You'll see a coach come in and he'll say, no, we're going to call it this. You're like, well, dude, that's the same thing. We called it that. Yeah, but that's not how it is in my system. It's like, okay. Like that, like now we're arguing semantics, and you're trying to make 11 other guys understand why you call it that way, or what, you know, what this offense is or defense is, as opposed to what we were doing before, which is all the same stuff. You just call it something different.
I just think you get play call cards these days. Y'all can get on the same page as what the verbiage is going to be, and that should be relatively easy to do. Some people on defense, some people call it boxing. Some people call it hammering. Some people call it forcing. You know what I mean? Like, okay, it's leveraging from the outside. Don't let somebody effing get on the outside of you. There you have it, right? But the idea of it is, to me, is as a coach and adapting and adjusting, it sounds like he's talking about something that a lot of coaches do not take into consideration. And a lot of times I think is the difference between success and failure for coaches, which is understanding the humanistic side of how coaching works. Don't lose sight of the fact that these are people too. You're not just coaching them X's and O's. And in high school and sometimes in college, you get coaches who care about you as a person and they want to see you develop as a person. A lot of people say that, but it's tongue in cheek. You just say it because that's what you're supposed to say, because they are, air quotes, student athletes. But in reality, a lot of times coaches do not treat players in terms of connecting with them as a person, like on a personal level. And I think that that can be the difference between how somebody responds positively or negatively in terms of when you're in adverse situations, the heat of the battle, just regular everyday practices, is the idea of being able to tap in and connect with somebody emotionally. And sometimes, again, I think that that's an understated gift, that some of my best coaches were people that I had the best relationships with.
Yeah.
My high school coach was my best friend. He was one of my best friends, and I was the most productive in my career. I hate to say it, he's sitting somewhere rotten in jail right now for the things that he did, but my coach in college was my best friend. Like, that was the guy that I trusted. That was the guy that I spent the most time with and learned from, and I flourished. I get to the NFL, I had guys I was close with, but it just wasn't the same. And then now you get all these different coaches coming in because they're changing staffs. Then you don't even have the opportunity to build a relationship. So to have somebody like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have the amount of time that they had together, they had to have created a personal human side of the relationship. And if Alex Guerrero is saying what he's saying, to me, that says that those are the conversations that Tom Brady was having with him. And Tom Brady, as calculated as he is, was okay with Alex Guerrero coming out and saying that in the public.
No,
in fact, maybe wanted him to say it.
Yeah, listen, I undersold Alex Guerrero this whole time. I mean, I'm assuming next week he's going to give everybody tips on how to win the lotto. Is that going to happen next, Mr.
I mean, it'd be nice. I would listen to him.
Yeah, Mr.
I would
Know-it-all.
Take his advice and buy a ticket. Yeah.
Good God, man. Look at Alex Guerrero. All right. It is two pros and a cup of Joe here on Fox Sports Radio. It's Lamar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox.
He's going to tell you how to specialize in loosening up your Davis Mills. That's what he's going to tell you.
Just like, come on. Oh, like, what are we talking about here?
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Ladies and gentlemen, enough with that. Albert Breer, he is the senior NFL reporter of the MMQB. You get him on Twitter, at Albert Breer, NFL Insider. Albert, appreciate you hanging out with us here.
H. Wait, which one is it?
I mean, come on.
Which one is Albert Breer?
Albert Breer.
Ohio State.
It was a joke.
Okay.
Yeah. You took me so literal.
Put some respect on his name.
Oh, my gosh.
Albert, I apologize. I don't know why LeVar is attacking you this early.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I wanted to congratulate you guys, although I don't know what's changed, right? You just have like a fancy logo and a name now?
Yes.
Yep. Two pros and a cup. Yeah. That's what they call for short.
It is.
A mug.
Yes, it is just a mug. Just a thimble, if you will.
Wow.
Albert, so what do you make of, because obviously you spend time covering the Patriots, and I think you still live in and around the area there, but what do you make of, you know, Tom Brady Sr., Alex Guerrero? I mean, we're a little over a week out, and we're already talking about Tom Brady's time in New England and what is going on there. Where does that land with you when you hear guys like Alex Guerrero come out and say, well, Belichick, you know, he didn't adjust. You know, he needs to adjust to players as they get older like Tom Brady did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously some old feelings coming out. And I think to some degree it's, the Brady camp getting ahead of this a little bit, because I think they know there are going to be a lot of stories that are going to come out next week, and they know the Patriots have a way of getting their side of the story out there. So I don't think this is like a coordinated effort. Like, I don't think Camp Brady like had a meeting and did a media blitz or anything like that. I think more so this was, you know, a couple of good reporters and Tom Curran from NBC Boston and Karen Grigian from the Boston Herald, who had relationships with these people, reaching out to them. And, you know, people on Brady's side of it figuring, well, if the Patriots are going to get their side of the story out there inevitably, then we might as well tell our side of the story as well. So I think that that's what that was. And I think what you're finding now, too, is that, you know, I think as we all knew at the time, but, you know, we haven't really heard anybody talk about it on the record, the divorce wasn't completely clean. There was some messiness at the end there, and it wasn't just at the very end, guys. It was over the last few years that Brady was in New England.
I was just going to ask you to follow up on that. I mean, what specifically and when do you think this fracture started? I mean, what was it 7 years ago? Was it, you know, was it more closer to the end of it? How did this whole thing work out in your mind?
Brady, I would say, like, you know, like there was normal, I'd say franchise quarterback, legendary coach tension for a while, but I don't think that that was unmanageable. I think where things really started to change a little bit was with the drafting of Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, when they took Garoppolo, and I don't know how many people nationally paid attention to this, but locally people definitely caught on, like, and heard it, you know. The day they drafted Garoppolo, Belichick got up there at the press conference, and when he was asked about them taking Jimmy in the second round, his answer was, well, we all know what Tom's age and contract situation is. The Patriots hadn't given him a new contract yet, and like Brady had been on the record as saying, I want to play till I'm 45. And at the time, I believe he was, I want to say 37. So it was, okay, you're not giving me a new contract. And now you're doubting that I can actually play as long as I want to play. And, you know, that was followed later that year by Deflategate. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, Belichick kind of put Brady out there and said, this is his deal, not mine, after Brady had backed Belichick during Spygate, I think all of that sort of played into it. And the thing that made it kind of the most interesting is that's when they started winning Super Bowls again. You know, so they won in 14 and they won in 16. And then in the last year of Garoppolo's contract, the tension sort of got ramped up a little bit because it was which way are they going to go? That was 2017. They went to the Super Bowl that year too. And so, you know, I think it was sort of there was a normal tension there between franchise quarterback who, you know, I think wants to be treated a little bit of a different way and had always been kind of treated as just, you know, and Brady, you know how the coaches like this work, LeVar, you too, like wanted to treat him like he was just one of the guys when he was already a legend. And then, you know, I think the Garoppolo pick, the aftermath of the Garoppolo pick, Deflategate, all sort of played into those tensions rising over the 5 years to follow.
AB, not to be outdone by the future matchup between Tom and New England, they have a pretty doggone big game coming up this weekend. And I just wonder, is this being touted and looked at as maybe a NFC championship preview?
Yeah, you know, the Bucs and Rams, I think both have reason.
Uh-oh.
You know, and
okay, there you go.
I mean, I think, like, I don't know. Like, it looks like they're better, that they have the ability to be better than they were last year, and they won the whole thing last year. So on one side, you got the Buccaneers, and then, you know, on the other side, I think that Rams team, based on the way they looked in week one and then how they sort of dealt with some adversity in week two and falling behind against the Colts, I think you're really sort of seeing where that Rams team might have another gear in it. And the intention in bringing Stafford in was to kind of raise the ceiling on the team, and you might be seeing that happening in real time now. So that's an enormous game. The Bucs have to travel cross country for it. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're going to need every bit of their focus to beat the Rams this week. And then on the other side of it, LeVar, consider this. I mean, in New England, all these players have heard all week is about the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. They got a good opponent coming down the pike in the Saints, too. And if they lose this one, they're limping into that Tampa game at 1-2. So I think it's going to be really interesting seeing how both the Patriots and Bucs go into week three and how focused they are on a couple of really good opponents. Mm.
Albert Breer joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, senior NFL reporter from the MMQB with us here. Albert, Justin Fields, you being the Ohio State alum, an Ohio State guy getting his first career start in the state of Ohio, it's going to be against the Cleveland Browns. What do you expect from him in his first career start?
Yeah, so the whole idea in going with Andy Dalton in the first place was just having talked to people there over the last 6 months, sort of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace saying, okay, we're doubling down on the team that we have already, and we believe this team can win with defense and running game, and we need a chain mover at quarterback. And, yeah, we believe in Justin Fields, but, you know, really we don't need to go through all the bumps that a rookie's going to put us through to get the most out of the team in the locker room. And it really is about the other 51 guys in that locker room, and that they felt like the best thing for that group was to have a veteran quarterback in there. Now, we all know if they make the switch to Justin Fields full-time, there's no turning back. So it was going to be difficult to do that while the team was still in contention. Well, now, and, you know, it sucks that Andy's hurt and everything else, but they're going to get an organic look at what Justin Fields looks like within the context of that sort of team and what a managed Justin Fields looks like with the running game, with the defense, and what Justin Fields can do to be sort of the bus driver for that sort of team. And so, I think the intent, the feeling there is that, you know, they're going to come out of these couple of weeks with, you know, Andy Dalton still as a starting quarterback. But, you know, I can tell you, there's, based on Justin's physical ability, based on his big game experience, based on, you know, his just mental makeup, I don't think you can rule out the idea that he goes out there and plays really well the next couple of weeks and makes it more difficult on the Bears. And you guys remember last year with Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert and how sort of a freak thing got Justin Herbert in the lineup. Anthony Lynn was planning on going back to Tyrod Taylor, and Justin Herbert basically took that decision out of his hands. So it'll be interesting to see if Justin Fields can do the same.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, I'm excited for him, though. Yeah, I think he's a heck of a player. He's got a ton of talent. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what he can do against that defense there for Cleveland. Albert, just in general, what's been one of the biggest surprises in your mind now, a couple games into the season, or maybe something that I guess you didn't foresee happening early on?
Well, I think everybody's seeing how good the Panthers defense is, and I don't want to pat myself on the back here, guys, because you know I'm not like that. I'm pretty humble. but I had the Panthers in the playoffs, and I think we're starting
what?
To see now. I think we're starting to see now how good that defense is, right? And how that defense, even with J.C. Horn going down last night, that there's real potential for that to be, you know, a top five defense in the league. And I think Sam Darnold can still play. To me, the one that really surprises me personally is the Raiders, because there was every warning sign going into the year that thing was on the verge of crumbling. Well, you know, there were rumors across the NFL about Mike Mayock's job security over the course of the last 6-7 months. You know, there were questions about the defense. They fired their defensive coordinator from last year, bringing Gus Bradley. You know, the business side of the building, and I know that's not completely football related, but it's still kind of part of everybody's day-to-day there. I mean, they cleaned out the business side. They fired a handful of guys who are at the top of the food chain on that side. So, you know, I looked at the Raiders going into this year, and it's like, God, that thing has a chance to really crumble. And they look great, you know, and they beat Baltimore, and they beat Pittsburgh, and they got a Miami team now coming across the country that doesn't have its starting quarterback. So they got a chance here to go 3-0. And so, you know, I think, like, we see some of the things from the Raiders that you might have expected. Like, you could reasonably expect that the offense was going to be good with Carr and Ruggs and Edwards and Waller and all of those guys. But the defense has been better, and they're playing better team ball in general. So, Brady, I would give you the Raiders as the biggest surprise through 2 weeks.
Huh, okay.
AB, we've been having conversation about how Matt Nagy has handled the quarterback situation where he is. And I'm just curious from your point of view, is this a narrative that Matt Nagy can survive? And if so, is it with keeping Justin Fields in no matter what? Is it with staying loyal and true to how much he's supported Andy Dalton? Where does this go?
Well, I think so. Like, the first thing I start with, I think Nagy's audience is the locker room. And, you know, I think, like, he knows he's got a veteran locker room with a lot of proud guys in there, like Khalil Mack and Eddie Jackson. And, you know, you can go on down the list. There's a core group of guys that have been there that have been in the playoffs a couple times. So I think that's who, you know, he knows he has to serve. So that's number one. Like, if it's going to be Justin over Andy, I think the locker room has to buy into that. I think there are two ways there are two paths for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace where there won't be a shakeup after the year in that organization. Number one is they make the playoffs. Doesn't matter who the quarterback is, they make the playoffs, they're okay, right? Number two is if they don't make the playoffs, I think they have to look like an ascending team coming out of this year. The reason why is because over their 3 years, they're actually top 10 in the NFL in wins. They've been in the playoffs 2 or 3 years that Nagy and Pace have been working together. But it's gone 12-4, 8-8, 8-8. So I think, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, they have to at very least show that the organization is back on sort of an ascending trajectory. And what's the best way to do that? Well, it's to have your rookie quarterback in there and playing well, where at the end of the year, ownership has to say to itself, do we really want to pull the plug on this and shake things up on a rookie quarterback, a young quarterback, who's playing really well, or do we want to stay the course because the kid played, because the kid was awesome in November and December. So to me, LeVar, that's the two paths that they have to keeping their jobs there. It's either A, you make the playoffs, in which case you're fine either way, or B, you're ascending towards the end of the year. And I think that that has to mean Justin Fields in there playing and playing well.
Mm. Albert, last one for me, and I just want to ask you this, because some people are, I guess, are talking about this or asking this question, but you know, the Tampa Bay Bucs taking on the Rams, could they be overlooking the Rams?
God, what a ridiculous
potentially
question.
To that a matchup they have next week?
Is
that
a possibility? Ever.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, so I was on Boston radio this morning. Let me ask you guys this. Is Bucs Patriots the biggest regular season game in NFL history?
Oh, it's the biggest matchup. That's for
that
certain.
is a great question, though.
Honestly think it might be, because the only one I could come up when they asked me that, the only one I could come up with that was bigger, that was even in that realm, was Favre going back to Green Bay.
Yes,
right. And the only reason, and if I compare the two, the only thing that Favre going back to Green Bay really had over Bucs Patriots was that Favre was playing for the Vikings, because he's playing for a rival. So that would be like Brady coming back as a Jet, right? But other than that, like the amount of championships Brady won, the like acrimony between coach and quarterback, it feels like Brady versus Belichick has it over that. So, and the fact that this might not happen again too, because they're in different conferences, right? To me, it's like as big a regular season game as maybe we've ever had, as I can remember at least. And so, you know, you can look until you can talk until you're blue in the face about how it's all about the Rams if you're in the Buccaneers building. It's all about the Saints if you're in the Patriots building. But, you know, like, there's a reality to this. These guys don't live under rocks. They have to hear. They have to be hearing it. You know what I mean? And so I'd be interested to see behind closed doors how those coaches address their teams with it.
You think they might be overlooking the LA Rams and Aaron Donald.
I don't know. You guys have been in those locker rooms. Like, if you don't address something this big, it's the elephant in the couch, isn't it?
While you got another team you got to play.
But I'm saying at least address it at the very beginning of the week.
Albert, don't let these juice heads talk
you
off this.
Up.
Hey,
don't
guys, let these guys. I'm not saying you address it every day, but all I'm saying is at the beginning of the week and Wednesday.
You got the LA Rams coming to the house. Like, what are you worried about the next week? Hey, you got the
Brady,
what's in front of you.
But here's what you say. Here's what you say. Like something along the lines of, "Listen, guys, I know what you're going to hear a lot about this week, and it's a game we're not playing on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, like, I need you guys to know. Like, I just think addressing it in some way. And I haven't been in these locker rooms. You guys have. But, like, I just feel like it's something that's, like, hovering both these teams.
No offensive lineman gives two craps about anything other than
Albert,
how the hell they're going to go
gonna
up against Aaron Donald.
Brady, he's going to get asked about it, though.
Yeah,
they're not. They're not, because they're going against Aaron Donald. They're scared about going against Aaron Donald.
Hey, Albert, I'm with you, man. Albert, don't let these juice heads talk you off it. I'm with you, man. Listen.
Who would ask that question?
Yeah.
Who would do that?
Yeah, I would. That's who. Listen, I'm with you. Albert,
the same guy that goes into the restroom and sits on the commode backwards.
Hey, Albert, these guys have never played the game. They don't get it, man. They don't know that world like we do. Screw them
and
about that life.
Guys, I mean, when you made a career stirring crap up like me and Jonas have.
Yeah, yes.
Like, we know
I
don't disagree with that.
So you can kiss our ass.
I don't want to do that.
OH! Yeah.
IO.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. My guy,
what
Albert
is happening
Breer.
Right now. Hawaii is going to be really upset about that.
The voice of God, Albert Breer. Get him on Twitter, at Albert Breer.
Too funny.
Albert, we appreciate
it. Thanks, AB.
There he is.
The voice of.
Oh, right. Man, that was great.
Lowercase G.
Glad I could get that question in.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.